summertime heat waves seem to be getting more and more commonplace these days. It seems like every year we're getting a new record-breaking high of sweltering heat. And now, while a little heat doesn't seem like it's that bad, there's actually a high cost on society. Heat waves cause increased wildfires, droughts, and even affect moods and productivity of citizens. I'm Christy Eye, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to be talking about what these summer heat waves mean for you. An initial calculation shows that the recent heat waves across the U.S., Southern Europe, and China may have cost 0.6% of GDP in 2023, as one day of extreme heat above 32 degrees is equivalent to a half day of strike. Additionally, heat-affected employees reduce their working hours and experience work slowdowns and errors. This is a well-documented phenomenon and are more pronounced in poor countries, which often have higher exposure and vulnerability given their lack of access to air conditioning. More than 61,000 people have died in Europe because of its record-shattering heat wave last summer of 2022. And across the continent, wildfires sprang up in Portugal, Spain, and France. And despite having the lowest carbon emissions, the global south bears almost the entirety of the economic brunt of extreme heat. They are hit harder by heat waves, and because they're more economically vulnerable and lack the infrastructure to adapt to the extreme climates. July was the hottest month ever recorded globally, further raising concerns about a future where children, especially those in the global south, will be expected to face more and more frequent and severe heat waves. Babies, toddlers, and malnourished children and pregnant women are the most vulnerable to heat strokes and other serious effects. Extreme heat can have a wide range of effects on people and economics. Heat waves kill crops and cause illnesses like heat strokes, but they also have other effects such as increased interpersonal aggression, increased rates of workplace injury, and reduced mental performance. A 6-year study of inmates across 36 correctional facilities without air conditioning in the Mississippi found that on days above 27 degrees, the probability of violent incidents rose dramatically by 20%. The study found that the world's wealthiest regions, such as Europe and North America, experienced an average of 1.5% loss of GDP per capita per year due to extreme heat. Now, by comparison, low-income regions, such as India and Indonesia, lost 6.7% GDP per capita loss yearly. And children cannot quickly adapt to temperature changes, and this can cause rapid heartbeats, cramps, severe headaches, confusion, organ failure, dehydration, and poor mental development. Asia experienced unprecedented heat waves this year, with temperatures climbing as high as 45 degrees in Myanmar, 44.5 degrees in India, and 42 degrees in China, with Thailand and Laos breaking all-time record highs. But while extreme heat is dangerous, extreme cold causes more fatalities. For every death linked to heat, 9 are connected to the cold. And interestingly enough, during the 2000 to 2019 period, while heat-related deaths rose, deaths from cold exposures actually fell. They actually decreased by a larger amount compared to heat-related fatalities. And overall, researchers estimate that approximately 650,000 fewer people worldwide died from temperature exposures during that time than in the 1980s and 1990s. So, to explain more about how heat affects people and the economy, we're joined by David Tail, co-founder of ProChain Capital. So now, as heat waves become more frequent and intense in recent years, could you provide an overview of the economic toll that heat waves impose on countries, including both direct and indirect costs?
Well, certainly heat waves, first and foremost, have led to deaths, which is, the worst level of tragedy that we can have. Certainly beyond that, there are massive economic tolls that we have. I mean, in addition to the loss of human life, we've had loss of vegetation, forests, animal life, so on. But then, there is the concern about, the use of certainly cooling methods, air conditioning, and that obviously releases or is largely powered by carbon-emitting fuels, and so therefore that leads to ESG issues and again a vicious cycle, somewhat of climate change. We've gone ahead and raised the temperature of seas all over the world. We're losing coral reef. We're losing species of different types of aquatic life. And then there is the issues of with such heat waves, a lot of normal economic activity becomes either more costly or, more difficult to perform. And so, the cost of travel becomes more costly because the amount the your fuel efficiency goes down when the your automobile needs to work harder. There's more friction between your tires and the road when the road is that much hotter. Tourism drops because people don't want to come to particular areas because the heat is so high. And then in terms of areas that are used to being much cooler, there is an increase of the need for air conditioning, for cooling methods that there never was before, particularly across Europe. We've seen that in mass, where areas that have never ever before needed air conditioning are now having to go ahead and install air conditioning. So I think that the ramifications are vast.
And now, which regions and countries are currently experiencing the most severe heat wave impacts, and what factors are contributing to their vulnerability to extreme heat events?
I really don't think that we could talk about severity. I mean, the easiest way to talk about severity, excuse me, is certainly, who's experiencing the highest temperatures, right? If you're experiencing a triple digit summer, without any end in sight, like in Texas, let's say, certainly that's severe. But people that were used to much lower temperatures and are now seeing increased temperatures, they may not be the highest temperatures that we know of in terms of hitting peaks, but relative to what those areas have previously experienced, they are extreme temperatures, and they affect everything that's going on in those areas. Everything from everyday commerce to people being able to be outside for extended periods of time, to snow melt and water temperatures. And so I don't really think it's appropriate to think about it on who's hit, in terms of severity, in terms of who's hitting the highest temperatures, because it's relative to everyone's area. Obviously, for humanity's purposes, certainly we can't survive in certain after a certain temperature. We're not there yet, but certainly, it is a possibility that we will get there if we continue to go in the same trajectory, certainly in certain places on Earth.
Heat waves can have a devastating effect on agriculture. So, how do prolonged periods of high temperatures impact crop yields, food production, and supply chains? And what are the implications for food security?
Certainly, we're going to have to shift. Certainly, the dependency that we've had in the past can no longer continue because areas that were previously fertile for certain crops at certain times of the year are no longer going to be, that dependable. We're not going to be able to be sure that we're going to get a robust crop of, whatever it may be, whether it be wheat or oranges or, cattle. Because of the difficulties in the areas that until now have been the most fertile areas for those agricultural commodities. And we need to go ahead and shift. We need to think about alternative areas. We need to think about, potentially indoor, Certainly, you know, indoor farming when it comes to a lot of these crops, certain things it's feasible for, but certain things, just because of the sheer size, there's no way you could move them inside. So the question is where can you move them? Where are they still viable on the planet? Where is there still, a friendly climate environment for these crops and for these commodities?
Heat waves can also strain the energy system as cooling demand surges. So how do the energy grids and infrastructures cope with this increased electricity consumption during heat waves? And what measures can be taken to ensure consistent energy reliability?
So I think there's two ways to talk about this. We could talk about it with respect to our existing infrastructure and then how we need to go ahead and change our energy infrastructure. With respect to our existing infrastructure, you know, a lot of places have been throttling, right? They've been rationing how much power can be used. And that's not particularly good because there is an increasingly, there is an increasing demand for power for the reasons that you specified. And so the current infrastructure comes under a lot of strain and is oftentimes not able to cope with it. We didn't, for instance, this summer, we didn't have any blackouts in the Northeast. We were, quite fortunate, but there are certainly other areas in the United States where power rationing had to happen. And it is an unfortunate, especially, when it's incredibly hot. So we need to, find other sources of power other than, our generally fossil fuel, generated electricity. And in addition, we need to go ahead and upgrade, our power grids. They are not, they haven't been invested in appropriately over the years. It's not something that people generally think about until there is a crisis. And at that point, sometimes it's too late in some senses. And so therefore we should be thinking about that now, especially if there's going to projected to be, because of climate change, there's going to be an increased strain on the existing power sources and the infrastructure of the power grid in order to deliver that power.
And now some regions are heavily reliant on tourism, are suffering from reduced visitor numbers during heat waves. So how do extreme heat events influence the tourism industry and the local economies that depend on it?
I think it's very complex, and I'm not saying that to avoid the question. I think that that's the truth. So for instance, this past winter in the United States, certainly across the Rockies, was one of the wettest, snowiest winters that we've seen in decades. A lot of all-time snowfall averages, all-time snowfall records were broken this winter. And, clearly that's, could be attributable to climate change. That means that the ski industry benefited enormously. It was the highest level of skier visits across the Rockies this year. That being said, temperatures may warm and the jet stream may not be the same. And so therefore, in a year where things are, not as wet and dry and hot, the ski industry could be crippled. And so we may go in various places from extreme to extreme in terms of the tourism that there is. In certain places, it's going to be consistent. Where it's hot, it's going to always be hot, and it's just going to continue to get drier and hotter, and that's not good for tourism because tourists are not going to, find that pleasure filled, and they're not going to go out on vacation there after a certain point. But I think when it comes to other more nuanced things like snowfall or rainfall, or like dry to wet, and things of that nature, I actually think that it's a much more complex issue. And I'm sure that, destinations around the world are grappling with this on how to go ahead and at least figure a way to, have some consistency, because without consistency, it's very difficult to plan. It's very difficult to invest because you don't know what your profitability is going to look like.
Thank you so much, David, but please stick around. David Tail will stay with us right after the break. And when we come back, believe it or not, climate change has had a positive agricultural impact in certain countries. So don't go away.
The Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
La pénétration coloniale française, ils ont combattu tous nos rois.
Nam.
Donc les Blancs ont commencé leur colonisation en Afrique, singulièrement au Mali.
Nous avons été meurtris dans notre chair. Nous avons été violés dans notre chair. Nos parents ont été déportés par les colonisateurs. Les colonisateurs nous ont instrumentalisés. Il a fait notre image, notre école à son image.
En réalité, la France a toujours vécu de ses colonies. Et si tu vois que la France elle a la troisième réserve d'or au monde, mais en France, on ne produit pas de l'or.
L'opération Barkhane est venue suite à un complot de la France pour la partition du Mali.
Fier du travail accompli, modeste devant la tâche qui se poursuit, autrement certes, mais toujours ensemble.
Mais depuis le départ de la force Barkhane, le Mali a pris son destin en main.
Oh, right, okay.
Nous voulons combattre le terrorisme, ramener la paix et la sécurité dans notre pays. Peut-être qu'ils avaient notre agenda.
La France va toujours chercher à faire venir le Mali dans son giron. Mais tant qu'un Malien est vivant, je vous garantis que cette tâche-là sera impossible pour la France.
Across the world, climate change has been a nightmare of drought, desertification, flooding, and unbearable heat. But for a few nations, climate change will be a blessing as the planet's coldest regions become more temperate. And no country may be better positioned to capitalize on climate change than Russia. Like Canada, Russia is rich in natural resources and land with room to grow. Its crop production, as well as that of Canada, Scandinavia, and Iceland, are expected to be boosted by the warming temperatures over the coming decades, even as farm yields in the US, Europe, and India are all forecasted to decrease. For centuries, the vast majority of the eastern half of Russia has been impossible to farm. But as the climate has begun to warm, the land has begun to improve. Across eastern Russia, wild forests, swamps, and grasslands are slowly being transformed into grids for soybean, corn, and wheat. It's a process that is speculated to accelerate with global warming. And in Russia, grain and yield production outlook were revised upwards as a result of milder temperatures during winter and wetter conditions during the spring. Agriculture is newly possible in the north, and the melting of Greenland's ice sheets will expose new areas for people to live, farm, and mine minerals. Nuuk, Greenland is a city set to grow rapidly over the coming decades. Fisheries there are experiencing a boost as they can fish year-round now with warmer ocean temperatures that have drawn new fish species further north into Greenland's waters. Nuuk farmers are now harvesting new crops, including potatoes, radishes, and broccoli. Global heating has also boosted Sweden's per capita GDP by 25%. And as the new ice melt opens up the Northwest Passage Sea Route, it will connect the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. And this will make it open and navigable for shipping, cutting down shipping times by around 40%. And this enables easier regional trade, tourism, fishing, and travel. So as heat waves and global warming wreaks havoc on North America, Europe, and Asia, and the global south, the northernmost territories are enjoying a boost to their economies, causing a redistribution of power and wealth. And for more, we're bringing in again David Tao, co-founder of ProChain Capital. So can you elaborate on this phenomenon and discuss how previously inhospitable lands are becoming more suitable for cultivation?
I don't think they were inhospitable. I'm thinking of places like, you know, the Amazon rainforest and areas that previously were just, I don't know if they were inhospitable, it's just they weren't developed. And I think now, you know, as more development is happening around the world, and certainly in, you know, the front, what we call frontier markets and emerging markets, there is an eye towards economic growth and efficiency. And so therefore they are exploiting the resources that have always been there that have been deemed, quote, inhospitable. And now they are becoming much more so hospitable. But on the other hand, you know, we rely on those areas that have been inhospitable for lots of other things, like maintaining certain species that wouldn't otherwise exist. They would go ahead and, you know, they would cease to exist if they didn't have their habitats. So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword in the sense of making these areas hospitable. And certainly, you know, the sooner you exploit them and the quicker you exploit them, you know, the sooner that they're going to go out of being, become extinct, and we're just going to see a depletion in resources.
And in the same vein, many areas that were previously breadbaskets of the world have now been dried up, and food scarcity is becoming a grim reality. So how can we efficiently allocate food so that the heat waves do not result in food scarcity?
There are people, you know, certainly at government-funded organizations and worldwide foundations that focus on this, and certainly they need to be thinking further out on the timeline than just, you know, today or the next year or so, because these issues are prevalent and they're becoming more serious. And we have, because of our planet being finite, they have a finite number of solutions for all of this. And so, you know, they need to be thinking about this now, and they need to be thinking about it aggressively.
And now some ecosystems may undergo transformations as a result of heat waves. Are there any cases where shifts in species distribution or biodiversity have led to unexpected ecological consequences?
I do, but I'm not going to be as negative as many people are. I think we as humans are going to figure out good ways to adapt. I think some smart people are going to figure out a way to, you know, in a way, make lemonade out of lemons. They're going to take a very difficult situation and be creative about it. And yes, you know, some things that we once had, you know, may no longer exist or exist in the same way that they existed. You know, certainly you don't want to see species of either, you know, animals or plants, you know, cease to exist and essentially not to be returned, you know, and go extinct. But I think that there are going to be ways for people with ingenuity, you know, to make a good thing out of this. I don't think all is lost. I think we're just going to have to conform to a new reality.
Are there any initiatives exploring innovative ways to harness the energy generated by heat waves, such as through thermoelectric technology or waste heat recovery?
I do believe that there is ingenuity out there that of people trying to go ahead and take the negative circumstances and create positive, you know, developments from them.
And now, as we look into the future, how can governments, industries, and communities work together to address the escalating costs of heat waves and build resilience against the challenges posed by rising temperatures?
Oh, I think that's really hard. I think we're on a trajectory of no return at this point. I think we all know what we kind of need to do. I don't know if governments holding each other accountable, you know, for promises that they make or targets that they are supposed to be reaching for. Either you care about, you know, the heating planet or you don't. And I think at this point, most people know about the heating planet. I think they need, you know, and everybody will choose to do what it is that they do. I don't think it's a productive spend of time or resources to go ahead and have a conversation with a CEO or an executive of a company who talks about reducing, you know, emissions and then, you know, jets off on a private jet, you know, as opposed to being able to fly commercial. I think people are a bit too contradictory, and I think a lot of the talk is worthless. What we need now is action, and I think, you know, people know what they need to do, and they need to do it.
Thank you so much for all your time today, David. Now, as extreme heat slams the world's three biggest economies all at once, the U.S., Europe, and China, it is compounding problems for workers, businesses, and the future of economic growth. And while there are many losers in this, the biggest loser of all are the women and the children and the elderly in the global south who are most at risk. The impact is inordinately bigger for the poor who may not have access to cooling or water or trees for shade. Meanwhile, the biggest winners, on the other hand, are the northern countries where previously unfarmed land is suddenly lush and fertile, creating new economic opportunities for growth. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.